You are listening to Mark Hatmaker Rough and Tumble Raconteur. This is a grab bag of old school Western martial arts, resurrected indigenous ways and empirical musings tinged with a heavy dose of respect, admiration, let's call it hero worship, for these hosses of yore. Hey crew, this is Mark Hatmaker coming to you from the Command Sharia. Today, let's talk something fun, something cool. Let's talk weapons. Let's talk the tomahawk. We'll be discussing a concept called the tomahawk cave, Wupitopunitai. Well, you know, some of you know that I recently did another of our little research tours, adventure tours, fun tours to America's great old Southwest. And, you know, that's where we go down there. I meet up with some of my historians and we go through their archives. And we also actually go out to the, well, me and the missus, we hunt down some old ruins, places and sites from history that we've assembled from, you know, old sources. We actually find them. A lot of these things you got to blaze the trail yourself because there's really no GPS pins to get there. And anyway, it's fun to actually go to the actual locations where some of these things were used and wrought and tested and tempered. And we also had some final puzzle pieces that we've acquired from resources on this trip and ready to present this revised approach to the Numuru Tomahawk, I almost say Comanche Tomahawk. And I can guarantee you this material is authentic and as verifiable as I can make it from the sources. And I'm going to, at the end of this little discussion, tomahawks, I'm going to go a little bit further into the Comanche language if you want to stick around and discuss that, this beautiful, almost being this tongue that's gradually fading away. Not gradually, it's almost gone. Anyway, the current volume of our Black Box Brotherhood instructional material, for more information on that, see our show notes and go over there and have a look at that. We're going to be presenting this single aspect of tomahawk work, which is called the Wupitopuni Tai. It's sometimes remembered as the Wupitopuni Kani Tubana, Punikani Tubana translates to a tomahawk wall or a tomahawk house, but again, the iteration I prefer is tomahawk cave, because this is where beyond the teepee on the ground, the cave was actually found and thought of not so much a sacred spot, a spot of interest. And if you've been in some of these the caves, you'll see why, where you're looking outside the eye of the cave into the sun, and everything all around you is just filled nice and closed. And it's a wonderful blockade. It's a wonderful metaphor and analogy for what you do with this defensive system. The cave is a good representation, refers to a formidable fortress from which to fight and hold off aggressors. Wupitopunitai can be thought of as the blocking system for the tomahawk. And system is a bit too staid a word for how this approach works. Anyone who has been present at one of our boot camps for our presentation of a spirit blade or emotional blade will have a clue to the ferocity I mean. It's something that really doesn't translate in video. I can discuss it. I can yell it and scream it all I want. It doesn't fly. But if anyone has been around and been kind enough to go, that is a very formidable thing to experience. Not so much the tactics. Of course, the tactics are brutal and mean. It's the attitude, the emotional attitude that goes with it. And trust me, this is not just reshuffled Filipino number systems, a repurposed overlay of European sword patterns. We've gone deep, deep, deep in historical weeds here. Again, I'll go get to the postscript about the Comanche, which has opened up, the Comanche language has opened up far more resources than ever been available, as far as I'm concerned. Again, I guarantee it's authentic and verifiable as I can make it from the sources. This proud, pragmatic warrior heritage had no need of what Musashi called sword flowers, that is, needless ornamentation. And we'll be dropping a series of blog posts talking about, I cannot help but find that the most pragmatic of all samurai, the one who actually took dueling seriously, the one who actually did more, and it wasn't working from there, we have to talk about Miyamoto Musashi, there is an incredible amount of overlay and parallel in thought, not techniques or tactics, of course. Of course, he has a double, two-sword method, and it's interesting how much the tomahawk is, both tomahawk and a forehand, and we've got the trade knife in the other hand, and we will definitely be covering that, but we're not just talking about this tactically. The idea behind it is, there's an incredible amount of correlation here, and I find it comes from pragmatic people, the Comanche and the pragmatic mind of Musashi, and we'll be covering that again in some future blog post or perhaps the podcast. So we really get how wonderfully these things translate to only the pragmatic of the world. There's, again, no need for sword flowers, no need for ornamentation. The tomahawk is its own vicious beast that takes into account the realities of an inertial top-weighted weapon. If you're trying to make some a scream or a Filipino Arnis overlays with it, it just ain't going to work. You're trying to take some standard foil or epee or saber work with it, it's not going to work. These are completely different weapons with their own different attributes there. Now, on volume, we will address the subtleties of, in this particular piece of material, the subtleties of the grip, the balance, the entirety of the cave, and the natural follows. And I have to say that this volume, Wupita Bungitai, is the foundation upon which the remainder of the Tomahawk materials work. It's got to be birthed out of this cave. I'm not going to give any more thing, anything else away with that. The material goes as a thing unto itself, but in the future with the Tomahawk, for the Tomahawk Road, those are interested. We'll go into the additional attack combination. Some of the unusual but wise tactics, so we'll discuss Tomahawk dances, which you think of these as solo forms of seat wild skills. I guess you could say it would be an equivalent of Hakata, but it's a bit more open-ended than that. Something I find fascinating is the woods runner's drills using the hawk while on the run. Think of this as raiding or dropping multiple opponents or being kind of like a frontier John Wick moving through the casino. This is constantly in the motion. There's no standing. There's no stances. There's no stock still. This is almost combat committed at a whirling, flying sprint. And, of course, we'll be talking about hawk and blade tactics together, which is the twin wielding. It's which the true story of the material, not, again, this overlay that's been taken from a European work or Filipino work. Again, this is the foundation of a Wind Tall House. It's built and it's released to the Black Box Brotherhood. And again, I'll provide links if you want to go there and take a look and see if this is something you want to jump on and start training this beautiful way to go. Now, I talked to a lot of these resources have been opened up to me because of the Comanche language, and I want to discuss that language for just a moment here. And we'll begin with a proverb. It actually comes from the Osage tribe, which is strive to be a person who is never absent from an important act. And the thing is, with this strive to never be important, absent from an important act, we often do not know what is important. Well, what is going on? Here's an instant for me of not knowing what is important. More than 7 years ago is when I began my study of the Comanche language to facilitate my studies of frontier rough and tumble combat in various old school ways. This language was at one time the most widespread native language due to the aggressive, wide-ranging territory of the Comanche Empire. Keep in mind, we all know how fearsome the Apache were. Well, the Apache were pushed into those mountains, and it wasn't by the U.S. Cavalry. It was the Comanche. The Comanche, it's just a crazy territory acquisitive people, the Comanche were. And a wide-ranging language is considered one of the languages you kind of had to know, the trade language you're going. You're going to have to get this down if you're going to be anywhere within this region. Now, the study of this language has been fruitful and rewarding for me in bizarre ways that I had never expected. Am I fluent? Oh, hell no, by no means, but I aim to be. I mean, I work on this difficult tongue daily. It's quite unusual. Resources to work it are rare. I started out with an 1870s era vocabulary that was put together by a Spanish friar, and it was actually written in Spanish, and so you have to kind of go through your the Spanish to get the translation of how the Comanche is being sent, you know, on and on and on from there. I actually reached out to Newman Resources in the reservation and working with some elders to get some materials together. Been very generous folk. Well, anyway, I began to do this like around 7 years ago. There were a few Comanche speakers. At the time, they were considered, according to UNESCO, there were less than 50 fluent speakers left in the world. Well, as of 2024, there are 9 fluent speakers left. That original less than 50, these were all elderly people, and the COVID pandemic more than decimated this gorgeous population. We've gone from less than 50 to 9. And that is rapidly likely going to dwindle, all right? Now, UNESCO has now classified Comanche language as severely endangered world language. Okay, 9. That number saddens me. I mean, it probably means nothing to people who've never even pondered the Comanche, but it's such a glorious legacy. Is disappearing. Now, when I began this study of the language, it was a lark. It was just, I found the vocabulary from the 1870s in an old box, and I thought, well, let's give this a shot. And as I pursued my studies, it became this passion. As I reached out to elders and the tribal elders and developed some minor relationships there, became something more than that. And now with those numbers in mind of dwindling and dwindling, unwittling, I may be involved in an important act. This isn't a self-serving to say, oh, look at me, I'm doing a grand thing. No, I was just doing this for fun. Actually, it'd be trivial, frivolous, but then strive to be a person who's ever absent for an important act. The point is, we never know what is important to others, to a culture, to history, hell, likely not even to ourselves. But if we embody that Osage wisdom, we will behave as if every act, every step, every word is of import. The wisdom is not advising us to seek out and winnow down to only being present at the big things that we know in advance. It is urging us to bring our best game, our best soul to all things so that all things become big things, so that all things are important. And then with that said, me starting up with something as a lark, building some minor relationships and realizing, oh, it'd be neat to kind of know this. And then it drops down. I see those numbers dwindling to 9. I go, well, maybe this is important to know this. And maybe if there's anything I can to help perpetuate this spread. But I do know it has unlocked doors for me. I've taken something where the frontier rough and tumble I've loved. And then there's resources that never, ever, ever would have been available to me to unlock what's going on there. And just by having an understanding of this language and this culture, well, then brand new vistas appeared, and you're going at my late age, and, you know, 58 to go, to find things that are just completely brand spanking new, except the fact they're hundreds of years old. Well, that's just glorious. And that important thing that I'm participating in, well, that's given far more to me than I can ever give to that. So with that said, crew, may we all live our best in all things and treat all things as important things. And I want to say to you, which is respect and honor, my friends. If you would like to see a text version of this Tomahawk Cave material, I'll put that in the show notes there. If you want to consider joining the Black Box Brotherhood, I would love to have you aboard. Join us and hundreds of other folks around the world. And go, let's do what was going on in the old days, and let's do it gloriously, and let's do it as authentically as we can. Take care of yourself, crew.
Well, if you dig what we just discussed today, I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Hell, support it if you want. I'm not your dad. Do what you want. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just visit our website, extremeselfprotection.com. You'll find links to the blog, all of our products, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more pages of like musics.